The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am but one of your hosts for today, Jonathan Larson of the University of Kentucky.
I am another one of your hosts, Jody Green from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
And I'm the last host today, Michael Scavarla with Penn State University. John's laughing at me.
Bring in the heat.
I never know what's going to come out of my mouth.
That's true.
That's the story of my life.
We will find it as we go. That is the Michael Scott principle here on Arthropod. We are very excited today to be getting together to record. We are all back in the studio. We've had a couple of episodes in a row of Jody on the road. Why would you apologize? People love it. You were at the National Urban Pest Management Conference, right?
Yes. Conference of Urban Entomology. It was all like bed bugs, ants. There was a lot of rodents too.
Okay.
But yeah, it was everyone, but everyone was there.
That's awesome.
So it was pretty cool.
And you got some cool audio. Hopefully people have been tuning in and listening to that. I wanted to ask, how are you guys doing? How's the summer going? We're kind of getting into full swing here with bug season, right?
I'm hanging in. You know, I'm in the state, Nebraska. It's not for everyone, I think, is our tagline.
It sure is. It sure is.
It used to be the good life, right? But right. Now it's not for everyone.
And then they got sued for false advertising. Geez.
It's kind of bonkers here in the bug world. Like it's College World Series around
right.
here. It's trafficy, and then also it's just weird. You just don't know where, like, people are that you meet or you run into are from like everywhere. There's this heat wave, there's a COVID wave. Every bug is bugging people. Like, you know, I don't know, things that I didn't think were pests are pests to people. I barely know what day of the week it is anymore. So
have you had some sort of outbreak of hackberry butterflies? Is that what I saw?
So, I don't know. We'll probably go into like the biggest bugs of summer, but I don't know. How about the rest of you?
Mike, what do you think of the summer 2022 so far?
It's summer. I thought it was still March.
Yeah.
My sense of time is just gone. I have no idea what day of the week or even what month it is. I'm still being slammed by European hornets. People are still contacting me like, is this a murder hornet? And I've had a couple people say like, I found a murder hornet. They are definitely here and your stuff is wrong. And I have to be like, no, it's a European hornet. I'm still doing like newspaper interviews about them.
Yep.
It's 2020 all over again. And I don't understand it.
I mean, on the one hand, it's nice that people are that invested in being monitors for a potential invasive species.
No, I would rather look at 1,000 European hornets and catch the one Asian giant hornet that gets here. But I just, the fallout from this one article, my goodness.
It's true.
Can we say, like, if you want attention, just put murder in front of it?
Oh, can we come up
with like with a murder springtail? Like, if we call because springtails are crazy right now because of all the moisture, can we just call it the murder springtail?
Ooh, maybe not springtail, maybe murder hoppers.
Yeah, I like that.
Can we call Asian jumping worms murder worms?
Yeah. And people will think they're living in Dune or something.
So yeah, that's been the big thing. Other than that, it's a bunch of like home pests and the same stuff that I get normally. Maybe this will be a little bit of a preview for the next episode. I got some birthday money and bought some carnivorous plants. And so after 15 years of not having any, I've got a little mini bog garden outside again. And that's been the one like joyful highlight of the summer. Like I go out every day and look at my plants and see what bugs they've caught. Sit there for a couple of minutes looking at them. So that's been fun.
Did you like drink some coffee or tea and stare at them digesting their food?
I go out in the afternoons.
Okay.
Oh, you usually don't do breakfast? Breakfast with bugs? I do breakfast and bees on the weekend. I take my coffee out to my...
Oh, that's a really good idea.
To watch bees on the flowers.
This has been the Arthropod self-care hour.
John, what's going on with you?
What's going on with me? I'm getting ready to do a lot of treatments, and it's going to be 99 degrees, I think, on the day that I have to go out and do it. So I'm preparing to sweat quite a bit. We in Kentucky are getting slammed with a few different weird things. I don't know if you've heard, but there was filariosis or filaria in Tennessee.
Yeah, with the Asian longhorn tick.
So we're very concerned about that somehow making its way up into this state. We have had incursions now of fire ants in eastern Kentucky. I feel safe sort of saying that here on the podcast in terms of when it will get released and everything. But we've traditionally had them in the Land Between the Lakes area out west, and they're continually contained and sort of eradicated, but they keep popping up every now and then. This eastern invasion is a little different, though. It's the hybrid ant, and it seems like people accidentally brought it up with some pine straw. And they've been released, and I think the last count was maybe almost 70 mounds that have been discovered on just like one little transect that the Office of the State Entomologist has been investigating. I'm not going to say the counties or anything because I don't want to freak anybody out there, but it's something that we're ramping up to deal with in a bigger way, I guess, here in the Department of Entomology. Those are kind of my big news topic items.
What are you treating for?
What am I treating for? I have a multitude of trials this summer. I have perhaps bitten off more than I can chew. I think I'm doing 5 white grub trials and 1 adult Japanese beetle trial. They're flying now. I just saw my first ones here a couple of days ago. And I have 1 caterpillar trial, and somebody's trying to hire me to do an ant trial. So we'll see if I pick that one up too.
Wow.
My fun thing would be that I did get to hire a videographer for the summer, and I've been hanging out with him in the field. His name's Jack, and Jack is on our YouTube channel, University of Kentucky Entomology Department, and he's pumping out a lot of cool videos, and he's a lot of fun. It's cool to hang out with him. He made a character for one of his video series where he called himself Ben Riley, and I was like, I didn't realize that I had hired the Scarlet Spider because Ben Riley is a comic book character, and then he realized that I was also a nerd, and so we kind of hit it off and have been going gangbusters ever since. So I hope people will check him out on our YouTube channel and on our Kentucky Bugs TikTok page as well.
I've seen him on TikTok. That's why I asked what his name was today, because I thought his name was Ben.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's a character that he made and adapted from Spider-Man. And I get to pretend to be J. Jonah Jameson from the Spider-Man movies as his boss in those videos. And I love it. My wife has been mocking me because I'm like, I get to go like, bring me pictures of Spider-Man.
I like when you're on them. So it should be more for Jonathan Larson. So, okay. So here are my summer bugs. Okay. Sawflies were crazy. Like this spring, summer, okay. I've never seen so many sawflies everywhere. We had like the brown headed ash sawfly. So they were in the ash trees and just like falling down on the everything. So on decks and on grass. And so people were just flipping out. The rose slug sawfly, which we always have. Columbine sawfly, which we always have. So everything was camouflaged and covered in little worms. So people were flipping out. A lot of winter desiccation because of the drought we had. And so everyone blamed the bugs. So I got all those calls too. There were those invisible biting bugs that everyone was calling about. And I think they're thrips.
Oh, yeah.
But, and this is just from, I don't know, me being outside and actually finding a couple. But I don't know. They stop yelling at me after they stop thinking that that I'm not doing my job. But yes, the latest weird thing is the infestation of Hackberry Emperor butterflies along the Missouri River in, I guess, Nebraska City area. So more eastern, southeastern Nebraska. But we got a couple calls and it was just like, how do I get rid of these butterflies? And then, you know, here where people are like, how do I, it's pollinate, no, National Pollinator Week. How do I see more butterflies? What do I plant for more butterflies? And then there are people like, I want to kill these butterflies. They're all over the place. And I was like, they're not hurting you. Well, I don't like them. And I was like, do not spray anything all around for butterflies, please. They will go away soon.
I will throw you in jail.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I guess it's just dense populations, but they're like on the houses and they're being hit by cars because it's just so dense on the country roads. If I didn't have to work, I actually wanted to drive down there and see it for myself, but I didn't have the time to do it. But yeah, that was a pretty weird one.
The thrips thing does seem very plausible. I remember that happening to me one sort of spring, summer border time period in Nebraska. I was sitting in front of a window and the wind was blowing really hard. And I all of a sudden started feeling pinprick bites on my back. I was wearing a white shirt and I sort of swatted back there and I pulled out some thrips. And I looked at my window and they were on the screen like they'd been blown out of a tree. They were hitting the screen and then coming through. They could fit through the little things. So maybe you're onto something there.
Yeah. Well,
with their stupid little mouth parts like that.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I don't. That's a whole other story.
Perhaps a podcast episode in the future. Maybe. Or a therapy session. Either or.
Yes.
So it sounds like we got lots of stuff going on. We have always talked about, you know, it's a busy time this time of year for extension professionals. And it sounds like 2022 is holding true to the pattern. Do you guys find yourself saying 2022 the same way that you say Scooby Dooby Doo?
I don't.
2022, where are you?
Yeah, exactly.
I hadn't thought of it before that, but now I won't ever not think that.
I had that realization a couple of days ago and I can't stop thinking about it. So now everybody that listens will also have that problem. Today's episode is going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully help us to unwind after all of that stress we were just describing, all these pests and non-pests that people are concerned with. We want to talk about an amazing summer insect that people tend to love. We're going to talk about fireflies. I think that they're wonderful. I think that both of you feel the same way. Is that true?
True.
Yes, I like them.
So we're going to talk. Oh, go ahead.
Nobody has called to complain about those.
Probably because they're asleep.
Like I haven't in the last, 6 years had anyone complain about fireflies.
I would say I have the opposite problem. Most people want to know where they are. And I think we'll get into that maybe towards the end of our discussion here today. It seems like a lot of people are on the hunt for fireflies. They want to know where they are rather than trying to get rid of them. So I thought maybe one way that we could start off this discussion is talking about that name, fireflies. Is that what you both have traditionally referred to the insect with a glowing butt in your history? Or have you ever called it by another name?
I grew up calling them lightning bugs.
Yeah.
But then after I went to college, I switched over to fireflies and I almost use that exclusively now.
Once you got that book learning?
Once I got that book learning, got away to the big city.
You've changed, Mike. You've changed.
Well, that's actually very true. Yes.
Jody, how about you?
Okay. So I honestly didn't remember.
Okay.
Because I use both. Like I say firefly/lightning bug. And knowing full well it's neither one of those kind of. But I had to reach out to my parents and ask them because I didn't want to be living a lie. And my mom said, well, your dad used to catch them for you. And they're called fireflies. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then last night I said to my husband who grew up in Indiana, hey, so firefly lightning bugs, like what did you grow up calling them? And did you have them wherever you lived? He's like, yes, we did. And they're called lightning bugs.
Yeah. I also grew up saying lightning bugs, definitely in Indiana. The lightning bugs were down by the creek. All those kinds of things that I guess I colleged my way out of, very similar to Mike. I included some maps in our show outline that we'll include in the show notes. One is a survey that I think was done by maybe USA Today. It has sort of a purple and orange contrast coloration. The other one is from an informal Twitter poll, if my understanding is correct, and it was posted on Reddit. And data is beautiful, and also in map porn, I think. I apologize for the name, but
I think it's okay to say it.
it's showing some Twitter respondents in terms of what they call them. And I thought that one was slightly more interesting because it shows that there are areas where they are almost interchangeable, these terms of lightning bug and firefly, where we see people using them both at the same time or doing the slash that Jody was describing before. The thing that I also find very interesting is that firefly is so prevalent in the Western United States. I know that in the Western United States, they're not necessarily as quote unquote famous, if that's the right word. I know there are fireflies out there. I don't want to get added and told, you know, oh, there's a lot of biodiversity out there, but I don't think that the Western US is known for these like spectacular firefly displays at night as much as the Eastern United States. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. West of the Rockies, they don't, like in California and whatnot, in the Pacific Northwest, they don't have fireflies that light up. They've got diurnal fireflies that don't have the lighty up bits. they don't have the glow, but
the lantern, perhaps.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
The spark.
I like this map. This map is fun because look at that. Look at that little reddish part. I didn't look at this map last night. So. And I asked my daughter, I said, hey, what do you call them? She goes, well, because you confuse me, I call them fireflies / lightning.
That lines up with the Nebraska map that we see here, where Nebraska is very red and it indicates they use lightning bug and firefly interchangeably. Where I'm from in Indiana is very heavy lightning bug territory. Kentucky is almost entirely lightning bug territory. And I would say that in my experience talking about these around here, that's very true. I don't know that I've heard a member of the general public say firefly before. Only in the hallowed halls of the Department of Entomology do we use that nomenclature here in Kentucky. Mike, it looks like Pennsylvania is kind of a mix.
Yeah, I mean, down where I was around Pittsburgh, it's all lightning bug.
Right.
But elsewhere, it's both.
Once you get to the New York border, it looks like they're switching it up and using both.
I read somewhere on a blog that it's like wherever the places are that call pop / soda Coke.
Yeah.
They call it lightning bug. Oh.
Yeah, that would line up. That would be right. I would love to see the overlay of those maps. I think that I know that map that you're referring to. So there's definitely a lot of cool nomenclature that we could dig into with this. I find that discussion fascinating. I like reading about the names that they have in other countries. I am not going to butcher another nation's language and try to pronounce any of them, but fireflies are global and they have interesting names everywhere that they live. But here in the United States, it seems like this lightning bug firefly debate will rage forever. Despite the fact that this both really are a bit misleading, as the fireflies are neither flies nor are lightning bugs bugs. We are talking about some soft-winged beetles, and I was going to turn to our resident systematist / taxonomist / Michael Scavarla.
Ah, that's me.
Talk about the superfamily Elateroidea.
Elateroidea.
Yeah. So who all lives in that group, Mike?
Yeah, so Elateroids, it's a big group. Some of the things that people are going to be familiar with are click beetles. So these are hard-shelled beetles. They're kind of, I don't know, torpedo-shaped, I guess. Bluntly rounded at the front largely and more pointy at the back. And when you flip them on their backs, they click and can right themselves. Out here, we get eastern click beetles, which are some of the biggest beetles in the area. And they've got the really big, black, dark spots on the prothorax, which is kind of cool. Soldier beetles. It's another group. Similar to fireflies that are kind of leathery winged. They don't have the wings that are quite so hard. Another name for them are leather wing beetles, appropriately enough. And they're predatory. You find them often on flowers, especially out here in the East. We get the goldenrod soldier beetles in the fall.
They love it.
Yeah,
the margin soldier clusters. Beetles. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, if you go to any time of year, there's going to be soldier beetles on flowers, often goldenrods and daisies. And then another group that people may be less familiar with, but might recognize if you like point it out to them, are net-winged beetles. They are similarly kind of soft-winged, soft elytrid, I guess. But they're the veins of the wings are very obvious. And so they have this net-like pattern. The elytra are expanded, so they're kind of wider than these other groups. And they're typically like oranges and blacks because they're very distasteful. There's a bunch of other groups that I am a big fan of because they're small and brown that people are not going to be familiar with. So you've got things like eucnemids, the false click beetles, throscids, which I am blanking on the common name, but they're also very small and kind of look like click beetles, but they're different.
Okay.
And there's a couple other groups as well. But yeah, it's a big group. Some of them are very hard, like the click beetles, but some of them, again, like the fireflies, have these softer elytra. So you pick them up and they're not very hard, and you think, well, maybe this isn't a beetle because it's not hard, but they are.
Yeah, I do think that's what trips a lot of people up, that soft elytra, that forewing that covers up the more membranous back wing. That's more famous in things like Japanese beetles or a lady beetle or something for having that hard elytra. And this group, we're talking more about sort of soft, bendy ones, which is why sometimes you can have disasters when you catch them. You may crumple parts of their wings if you're not gentle enough with your touches on the fireflies. But thank you for illuminating us on that group, Mike. And I appreciate your passion for the small brown ones and the nitty gritty of getting down in there and talking about all of these cousins to the fireflies.
Just as an aside, one of the reasons I like the small brown ones, as an undergrad, I found a throscid in one of my samples and I looked at it and I tried keying it out and I just could not figure out what the heck it was. So I took it down the hallway to Bobby Brown, who was a USDA identifier that was stationed at Purdue, and like from across the room, he's like, "Oh yeah, that's a false click beetle."
That's awesome.
How did you do that? Like, I've like been banging my head for an hour on this and he'd like brought me over and showed me the bits, like, "Oh, you look at this and this and this." Oh, okay. And I've loved them ever since.
And now you are that guy.
Oh, I don't know if I'd compare myself to Bobby Brown. He's very good at what he does.
So is it a false click beetle because it doesn't click?
Sorry, eucnemids are false click beetles. Yes, they look like click beetles, but they don't have the click mechanism.
Interesting. But there is some bioluminescence that happens within the click beetles occasionally. There's some other similarities between these groups, right?
Yeah. So some species of click beetles, I think there's one or two in Florida, and then some in the tropics have light emitting organs. Unlike fireflies that have them on their butt, on the terminal abdominal segments on the underside, click beetles typically have them on the prothorax on the top. There's also the group Phengotidae, and I'm again blanking on the and I'm quickly Googling it. This is
he's going to find it though.
Very good podcast. Well, yeah, the glowworm beetles. Duh, Phengotids. the larvae of them glow. They glow along the segments. So in the soft bits between the hard segments, they glow. And so they're also called railroad worms because I guess they look like railroad tracks when they're moving. I've rarely seen the larvae. The adults are out occasionally, and they're really neat because the males have these big feathery antenna that you often don't associate with beetles. But then the elytra are reduced, so the elytra are often these little stubby things. And so the flight wings, those membranous hind wings, are just kind of exposed on the back of the body. And you look at it, and if you're not familiar with the group, you're like, what is this thing? I can't even identify it to order. It doesn't have hard wings. It's got these big antennae. It's like, oh, wait, that's a beetle. So yeah, there are other elateroids that also glow as well as the fireflies, although fireflies are probably the most famous for it.
I would agree with that. And there's also some similar coloration here. Would you say we have some mimicry going on, perhaps displaying those warning colors, even if they really don't have anything to warn for?
I don't know. So there is mimicry. I guess in broad terms, elateroids in general are fairly dull colored often. You get a lot of browns and blacks, maybe oranges and yellows if you're lucky, but they're often like dull orange. They're not bright poppy oranges. So they're kind of, I hesitate to say bland, but they are not very colorfully patterned the way other insects can be.
They have a simple color palette is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it.
Yeah, get away from bland.
Bland. There is some mimicry. So the lycids, the netwing beetles I mentioned, are distasteful. And so other things will kind of mimic their orange and black patterning to look like them and try to get in on that mimicry train so they're not eaten by birds.
Aposematism?
Yeah, yes. Except it's like oranges and blacks and not really bright colored reds and blacks and things.
Right.
Fireflies are often distasteful too as well.
It's true. And fireflies are a part of this super family we've been discussing, but they have their own family, Lampyridae, which I think is a cool name. Sort of implies the lamp part and implies the light, the glow that they have there. There's around 2,000 species globally. And if you sort of look at them and compare them to all these others that they're related to, from what I've read in a book that I've been using for research on this topic, which I will post in the show notes, it's called Fireflies, Lightning Bugs, and Glowworms. And it's a whole treatise on this group. To be a firefly, your larval stage must glow. That seems to be a requirement to get into the club. I think that's really cool that they kind of glow throughout their life. Jody, have you ever caught an immature firefly?
Yeah, under a rock.
Yeah.
Like on the ground, surface of the ground.
It was kind of hanging around out under there.
With kids. Yeah. Not hanging out with kids. I was hanging out with kids. We were looking for.
And they do kind of glow throughout their life. You can see that the eggs will faintly glow if you ever discover them. I do want to be clear, you're not just going to find like a pile of glowing orbs in the woods or anything. It is something that you have to really look for. The eggs are usually hidden down in leaf litter or cracks and barks, somewhere that there's going to be moisture because they do dry out easily. There are, most of the time, the mom is going to lay the eggs and leave, but there are some species I have read that have demonstrated maternal care. And I think they have the coolest names of fireflies that I've ever read, the shadow ghost and blue ghost species of firefly, which I think implies that maybe they don't have the large light emitting organ on the back, or they have a different color. I've never seen those species. Have either of you?
No.
Mike is Googling it.
I am. You can hear my very clickety-clackety keyboard.
Will you provide free ASMR content to some of our listeners that get that sensation? But he's looking those up. Perhaps we can post some pictures in the show notes of those. After about a month, the eggs will hatch, and then the firefly will enter the larval phase, which is where it spends most of its time. Many species survive as a larva for a year to up to 2 years, so they would overwinter in this stage. The larvae do glow. The light usually comes from a pair of dots near the tail end of the insect, as Mike mentioned. They can be up to an inch long. Jody, how would you describe them? You said you've discovered them under rocks. What do they look like to you?
To me, they kind of look like prehistoric, kind of trilobite-ish looking, like a lot of plates.
I absolutely agree with that. Okay. When I first saw one, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, this looks like an ankylosaurus almost. It has that same sort of plated appearance, the spikes sticking off the side. I'm about to be dinosaur corrected by Mike, I feel.
Well, I don't know. That's why I'm like, when you ask me to describe things, because like, I don't know a lot about that kind of stuff. So to me, to compare it to, it's just like what's in my mind.
Right.
But I think it's hard to figure out where to start from because it looks kind of like a worm / caterpillar, but it's got these really hard segments on the top. And then it's under the soil or surface or rocks or leaf litter. So I think, I don't know, but once you know it and you see it, then you'll know that that's lightning bug firefly larvae.
Mike, do you agree they look kind of Jurassic?
Yeah, they do. They've got the hard flat plates and look like worms like that. I think the one thing I would add is that in some species, the females are larviform. Mm-hmm. So if you picture a firefly in your mind or a lightning bug in your mind, like in some groups, males and females both look like that adult that you're picturing. But in other groups, the females look like the larvae. And they're, you know, long and squishy. They have very short or entirely absent elytra and flight wings. The head's slightly different. But other than that, like you've got to really examine it to determine like, is this a larva or is this a female? Because it's really weird to see like you know, an adult male mating with an adult female in these groups, because you're like, that's not, that doesn't look right. That looks like a baby firefly, but it's not. They're adult females.
I think it's very cool. And it reminds me a lot about bagworms as well, since the larva form female is very similar. It just looks like a super caterpillar with like some extra length to it. So I think that's important to point out. It's also important to point out, we're kind of painting with a broad stroke. A lot of firefly larvae have this armor plated appearance, kind of a long neck. Others look much more like a wireworm. They have that sort of tubular appearance. And then the adult females, as Mike had said, do have this larva form in some cases as well. So we are painting in broad strokes. There are lots of neat little nooks and alleys that we can take with Lampyridae, and we'll try to bring those out. But if you know of any, we hope you'll point them out to us on Twitter, or let us know somehow through email, and we'll bring it up in the next show, because fireflies are fascinating and there's lots of cool things that we could talk about with them.
Well, and we're really talking most familiar about North American species.
Right, exactly.
Fireflies are worldwide. So like, I really don't know what like the larva you're doing in the tropics.
With the larvae that live here, I do know that we often tell people about their predatory nature. They live in these sort of damp, moist areas. So they're eating snails and slugs. They feed on earthworms. I've read about them being able to inject a venom that seems to be able to help to take down some of their prey as well. So they are cute and fluffy as adults, seemingly, but as immatures, they're vicious killers. And they're out there feeding on things and helping us to control some of these different populations. And then they pupate. I've never seen a firefly pupa myself in the field, but I have seen lots of cool pictures. They're often in clusters, it seems like. Some of them are kind of pink in color, and they stick up out of moss, or they're in leaf litter, and they can glow as well. So they're glowing all the time. They're like a little light bulb of life. Have either of you encountered these?
I have not.
No, but I want to.
Yeah, now we're going to all go out and try and find them this fall. They stay in this stage here in the U.S. between 1 to 3 weeks here in the eastern United States, depending on temperature. And then they reach adulthood, that spectacular stage of life where we're all most familiar with them. The ones here in the eastern and central U.S., generally speaking, are black with red and yellow markings on them. There can be sort of a highlighter yellow color or a more gold color. They don't live for very long as adults, usually 1 to 4 weeks, depending on what's going on. And they don't feed, is what I understand, as adults very much. They have been noted to land on cut up fruit and visit it. And they've also been noted to land on milkweed flowers. And there is some discussion that they acquire some chemical defenses from nectaring on there, but they're not out there feeding the same way that they were as an immature. They're mainly here to produce the next generation of fireflies, which is aided by those flashing patterns that they make with bioluminescence. So let's talk about bioluminescence. Jody, what is bioluminescence?
The phenomenon of living animals to generate their own light.
It's pretty cool, right? I mean, there's lots of different things that make their own light. There's fungi that are famous for it. Squid, I think, are scorpions. Pretty famous. Scorpion. Would we call that bioluminescence? No. Okay. Why not? What's the difference?
Under black light. Because I'm the one putting the black light on them.
Right. They're not doing making it on their glow. Own. Yeah, that makes sense. Mike, who else bioluminescences that you are fond of?
I'm so happy that you asked. I got asked to give a talk on bioluminescent arthropods back in 2018, and it was a really fun talk to like come up with and find slides for. And then nobody has wanted me to talk about it ever since.
Jody and I have a couple of those in our back pockets as well. Sex on Six Legs and a few others.
Yeah. Like I would love to come talk to you about insect bioluminescence. There's actually a lot of animals just in general that bioluminesce. So bioluminescence across all life has evolved at least 40 times. Across 746 genera, and there's more than 10,000 species across the globe that bioluminesce. Insects and vertebrates and fish and everything combined. So it's actually, you know, it's uncommon kind of compared to all life out there, but is a fairly common phenomena just in general, if that makes sense.
I think so, yeah.
And there are a variety of different arthropods that bioluminesce, about 2,300 insect species. So if if we consider that there's at least a million insect species and probably more, I think there's probably more of like five to 10 million. If we take a million insect species as like the bare minimum, then only 0.23% of all insects bioluminesce. So a very small percentage of them in general. There's also things like millipedes that bioluminesce, especially out west in the western United States. There's a number of species out there. It's much less common of a phenomena in millipedes. So only 11 species bioluminesce. And I think they're all out west, actually. Sorry, I've got my PowerPoint open. I was trying to see if there was anything else that I wanted to say about bioluminescing insects.
End of the show, Derek Hinnon would perhaps know about the glowing millipedes, right?
Yeah, he would. Let's see. There's centipedes that glow. There's 13 species. All 12 of the 13 are in the order Geophyllomorpha. So these are the really long soil centipedes that are kind of long and thin and stringy. If you're familiar with them, they're not like big hulking things.
So the Myriapoda, they're doing pretty good glowing wise.
They do. They do. They have some good representation. There are apparently some springtails that glow, and at least a couple species of rove beetles. But really, the group that has the most bioluminescing groups is Elateroidea, like we've mentioned before. So of the 17 families of Elateroids that there are, five of them have members that glow. And we've mentioned a bunch of them, the click beetles, glowworm beetles, and fireflies. There's also two others that are found in Europe, I think. I'm going to butcher these because I haven't actually said them out loud ever. Osmolicity and Rogomphthalmalidae. And yeah, those other two groups are primarily in Europe. They look kind of like, I don't know, other Elateroids. They look like soldier beetles or fireflies that have hard elytra. And then I guess the last group that we need to talk about for bioluminescing insects are some of the true flies. There are a number of fungus gnats and darkwing fungus gnats, Psittacomyids and Charoplatids and Cyarids, that the larvae glow. The most famous of these are the glowworm larvae in the caves in New Zealand. What I think is really cool is that those groups actually aren't cave specialists. You find them out in kind of dark, moist areas of the forest as well. It's just that they're most noticeable in these large congregations in these caves. But there are glowing fly larvae that also occur here in North America, specifically in the Appalachian Mountains and the Cumberland Plateau. You can find them in moss, in kind of wet mesic areas, like along creek banks and things. And they glow with a faint blue color. So if you're out walking in the woods in the Southern Appalachians at night and you see this light, faint blue color along the creek, that's going to be these fly larvae.
I think that it's awesome that you brought that up. It's just another reason to come visit Kentucky. I think come see our blue glowing stuff. Maybe we're a little too far north, but I was actually reading about some of that because I had a golf course manager call me about 2 months ago, and he was saying that something was glowing in his greens. I still haven't nailed down what it was. He tells me that it's yellow because this was the blue thing that you're talking about is the first line of inquiry I went down because it just seemed like it would line up. But I'm not quite sure what's going on with him yet, unfortunately.
Weird. Yeah, so there's lots of insects that glow. Again, it's a rare phenomena in the grand scheme of things, like across all insects, but the groups that are there can be fairly abundant and common. I mean, fireflies in the east are all over the place.
So let's talk about why you would want to glow. Mike, you've done this PowerPoint, it sounds like. Perhaps you would be willing to share with us. I know for me, the first thing I would think of is if I had a glowing finger or appendage like ET, for me, it's an illumination tactic. Like maybe I could light up dark corners and find things that I drop behind desks. but what are some other reasons that an animal may wish to glow?
It depends on your life stage and what you're doing. So the glowing fly larvae that I mentioned, they're glowing to attract prey. This is especially true for the glowworms in the New Zealand caves. They dangle these little sticky strands of mucus, and flies and other little gnats and things that are flying around the caves are attracted to that, and they get caught in the sticky strings, and then the larva reels them up and feeds on them. I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure the glowing fly larvae in the Southern Appalachians also use it for predation. But other things, so firefly larvae, and I think the adult elaterids and other things use it as defense. So you can imagine you're this insect larvae crawling around and something tries to eat you at night, and all of a sudden, flash, you glow. That could be very startling. It could be, you know, it's nighttime. You can't use coloration the way like a moth might flash its owl eyes in the back wings for startling predators. So what do? You flash a color at them or a light at them. And then to bring it back to fireflies, adult fireflies glow to attract mates.
So they can find romance out in a busy landscape, right?
Yes, most of the time.
Most of the time. We never speak in absolutes here on Arthropod, because in entomology, there are no absolutes. We are not the Sith. So we try to keep it open in that regard. But yes, it is a typically sort of a communication display between male and female fireflies here in the eastern United States, where they're trying to find one another. There are these charts online that you can use that will help you to identify the different patterns that are emitted. So species to species, maybe genus to genus would be a better way of putting it. They create a flashing pattern that helps them to find one another so that they're not mating across genera or across species. There are several different kinds of patterns. The ones that are maybe the most famous are just dots, Morse code-like patterns as they go. Some of them are quite slow. They'll do a flash, and then the male will fly a few feet, and a couple seconds will go by, flash again, and do the same process. Others create a flying J as they go. I know those are the ones that I seem to encounter the most. Others are very fat. I found one the other night. It was a very fast flasher. He was just like beeping really quickly as he flew through the landscape. And then what's happening is the males are up in the air. Usually they're creating that initial flash, and then there's a corresponding flash pattern that the female down below is supposed to create and respond with. And then I was just watching this the other night. He will fly down. There's a couple of new flashes that are made, and then they will partner off. They will pair together and mate so that they can create the next generation. It's a pretty interesting process to watch.
But before we move on, you mentioned the charts that show you this. I think the best one I've ever found is in the book that you mentioned kind of at the top of the show, Fireflies, Glowworms, and Lightning Bugs by Lynn Faust. One, besides having like species accounts for all the species in the eastern U.S. and being a super handy guide, the front cover actually folds open and has this really gorgeous chart of flash patterns of all the really common species that you're likely to find. And like you mentioned, flash patterns are how you can recognize firefly species at night. But for certain groups, I can never keep Photurus and Photinus straight. One of them in hand, you've got to like dissect the male genitalia to determine what it is. If you've got a dead specimen, like they're incredibly difficult to identify. But if you have them alive in hand, the flash patterns are distinctive. So you can identify the lightning bugs by their flash patterns and not any other way morphologically until you like tear into them and pull the genitalia out.
Wow, that's intense. You're either looking at their genitals or watching for a glow. I know which one I would prefer as the firefly.
The book is great. I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite references. I wish I got to use it more because people only rarely ask me about fireflies.
It's true. The other thing that I wanted to point out with these flash patterns and the different species is that there is one. I thought this is what you were building to, Mike. There is a female species out there. She's often called a femme fatale. I don't always like that nomenclature because, you know, trying to survive. She's not necessarily evil for what she does, but she is part of the genus Foturus, and she is able to mimic the patterns of the genus Photinus or Photinus. I don't know how to pronounce it necessarily, and lure in males from that genus to her. And then she kills and eats them. And I think it's a very fascinating thing. I always thought it was just a pure predatory behavior, but I sent you guys a paper. Have you read through this before about how this helps them to acquire certain chemical defenses?
Because does she not have those defenses on her own? She needs it from...
Yeah, the only way that she ends up with these chemical defenses is through the eating of these males. It's the only... It seems like it's the only way for her to acquire them. Mike, you were nodding. What were you about to say?
Yeah, and just I've read that paper. It's very good. And yeah, the more males of these other species they eat, the better protected their eggs are. So in this case, you know, I mentioned that for firefly adults, light the flash patterns and the bioluminescence is for mating, but in this case, it's been co-opted for predation.
Right, and if you go ahead.
Oh, just for I figured it out. Foturus is the group that you need the flash patterns to identify. Photinus, you can identify and hand largely, but flash patterns also help.
So we've talked about why they're making this glow. I think it's also pretty important, pretty cool to talk about how they make it. This is something that I've always been really fascinated by. I think I actually did it as part of my 4-H project. You had to make an education box, and I made one once that was about how fireflies, I think I called it lightning bugs at the time though, actually create this glow in the lantern on their body. And it is a complex chemical reaction. I am probably oversimplifying it today, but I think that this is the easiest way to really understand what's happening. So it's a combination of chemical products that go into it. They're able to push these together in their abdomen, and there's a chemical reaction that occurs that makes the glow. The key ingredients are luciferin and luciferase. There's also going to be magnesium ions, ATP, and oxygen. So luciferin and luciferase, they're named after the most famous fallen angel of all, the morning star himself, Lucifer, the light bringer.
Get the devil out of here.
No, you're fine. I was really hoping that you would bring something to that. They are two different kinds of chemistry. Luciferase is an enzyme. It's mixed with a substrate, luciferin. This starts the reaction, and there's going to be ATP that's mixed in. That's an organic compound that helps to provide energy for cellular processes. You probably heard about it in Bio 110 or something back in college, or maybe in your high school biology class. So ATP goes in there, and then magnesium and oxygen are added to the mix, and then the glow will occur. And I think it's cool that oxygen has to be introduced because that makes it even more like fire, like flame. And the glow is emitted typically from the bottom side tip of the abdomen and an area that is called the lantern, at least in the book that I was reading through that we've talked about. And the lantern area is different in color from the rest of the abdomen. Most of the abdomen is black. This area is a highlighter green, highlighter yellow color. And then when that chemistry is mixed together in there, you get this flash. They're able to control it to a certain extent. It seems like hydrogen peroxide and a few other things are added to it to turn it off if they need to, or to kind of control that pattern that they're making as they go. And I just think it's really cool, like all these things that they're combining together in their abdomen. And I think that one of the cool factoids, at least that I've heard about this, is that the anecdote is that 90% of the energy used in this reaction is emitted as light and only 10% is heat. If you compare that to a human-made light bulb, we see that we waste a lot of energy. Our light bulbs use about 10% of the energy that they take in to produce light, and 90% is wasted as heat. So if you've ever wondered why you don't get burned grabbing a firefly, even though they're glowing, that's why. It's not the same thing as your light bulb that you've got plugged in to the lamps in your house.
One, just to kind of follow up on that, I think one really cool aspect of the glowing and with luciferin and luciferinase is that we've been able to biomimic it. So there's been some biomimicry that's gone into LED light bulbs to make them more efficient. But I think I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but I think my favorite part of it is glow sticks. So if you think about like the yellow green glow sticks, they have a very similar color to firefly lights. It's because we're mimicking that reaction of luciferin and luciferinase in the glow sticks to make that glow. That's also why they don't produce heat.
And you so have next to like, time,
yeah, you gotta crack them.
Yeah.
So next time you crack a glow stick, think about the lightning bugs that it's based on.
But don't crack a firefly like a glow stick. You don't have to do that. They'll glow for you. So I was actually talking with some folks about fireflies and lightning bugs. And one of my coworkers, Rick Besson, he was talking about how as a kid, he had gone out and caught fireflies for NASA and sent them in, and you could get a penny a head. And so I was like, this sounds amazing. I have to know more about this. Because Mike, you've mentioned this, like we've biomimicked this. We've tried to create our own version of this. I tracked down what was maybe going on that he was a part of as a kid, and it wasn't NASA. What I was able to track down is that this was a company, Sigma Aldrich, who they did this. They had swarms of kids going out. They would pay a penny a firefly, and they collected these over the course of a couple of years. And I guess they've got so many fireflies that they have stored in frozen storage that you can still buy them from them that were collected in the 70s. It sounds crazy. I found this on Atlas Obscura, and apparently it was true. You could make quite a bit of money if you were willing to go out and catch them and send them in. So I thought that was just an interesting little aside, that it does seem like there's been a lot of research going on with this for quite some time. And there were maybe some weird practices going on back in the 70s in central United States.
That sounds like it could be a really useful resource for entomologists. We've kind of talked on the show before about insect decline and global climate change and whatnot. If those really are still frozen, like that could be a really cool resource for somebody that's thinking about some of these things, like looking at climate change through fireflies from the 70s to now, or the impact of insect decline, like what species were where, and like have the genetics changed? Can we see like a bottleneck effect happening because they're less abundant or something? That seems like it could be a really cool resource if you can still buy them.
Yeah. So I'll quote from this article. A recent profile of the company, now called Sigma Aldrich and valued at $17 billion, brought up this ancient history with current employees, some of whom were former members. They all laughed. Quote, what kind of company would do that anymore? The reporter asked. That particular age of innocence or ignorance or both has passed. Some remnants, though, have stuck around with a kind of macabre afterglow. You can still buy a jar of whole fireflies from Sigma, pulled from their vast overstock provided by the club. Or you could head out and catch the fireflies flitting around, the bounty now off their heads, lighting up for their own lives. So it does seem like, at least at the time of the writing of this article, that there was some that we could get a hold of if we were so inclined. What I am very interested in is that there was paraphernalia. There were buttons and things that you got when you were an official member of the Sigma Firefly Scientists Club. And I desperately want one. So I'm going to be keeping an eye out for that on eBay here in the next couple of years. With that, as we kind of transition towards the end of the show, we've talked about what they are, why they glow, how you can identify them with the glow. I kind of wanted to talk at the end about what they mean to us culturally. I think these are really important insects. They're very charismatic. They help us to talk to folks that maybe want to know more about bugs. But I was curious, Jody and Mike, what do fireflies mean to you personally? Maybe we can kick it off with Jody here.
Well, I don't have recollection of being enamored by them when I was a kid, but I think I make up for it as an adult.
Yeah.
I know that... we had our nature night walk that we have like annually. And I don't know, we always time it sometime in June. And that was the first time this year that I saw fireflies flashing. And it's just Dr. Fred Baxendale always used to talk about nature's wondrous pageantry or the wondrous pageantry of nature. And I think that's what fireflies are. I think it's so cool. Whatever you guys were talking about, all the action going on in the butts. And I think knowing that it has to do with mating, and then there's some kind of deception but it's also, there's just so much involved behind the scenes and the science behind it. But to see a firefly is just, I mean, it's nature is just so whatever, wild, crazy, beautiful, amazing. We all need to go see it more.
Filled with pageantry. Go enjoy the pageantry, right?
Yes.
Mike, what do they evoke for you?
Jody's making it really hard to keep this clean tag, talking about butt action. You can cut that. I just wanted to say it. Growing up, we caught fireflies in my dad's yard. We'd stick them in jars and watch them glow for a while. And I kept them overnight a couple times. We'd wake up to a jar of dead fireflies. And that, like, looking back, I feel bad about that. And even at his house now, there's not nearly as many, if any at all. And he hasn't really changed anything. He doesn't spray pesticides. It's just this, you know, general decline. I think about that a lot. We've got a number of different species here at the house that we have now. And I really try to, I don't know, I guess they're kind of an indicator species. Like if we've got good fireflies, good habitat for them, it's good for everything else. So I really try to, like, you know, keep the lights off at night and don't turn the porch lights on, and really try to make it so this is good habitat for fireflies and other things. I know we've got at least four or five species here that I've seen based on the flash patterns. I wish I could identify them. I've tried looking at some of these charts and I still can't figure it out. And a couple
it's not
of
as
these
easy
things,
as we presented it. It is hard.
No, I feel like it's like bird calls. You need somebody that already knows it to take you out and, like, show it to you and point out, like, this is that, and this is that, and this is that. But there's a couple of species of Photinus that are up in the trees that are really cool. We've got one walnut that, and it just started happening recently this year. Like, it happens every year, but phenologically recently in this year, that they've started flashing up in the trees. And if you go out, like, right after dusk, like, the whole tree is just popping with these things going off for a while. And it's really fun to go watch. Remember last year when I saw it, I woke my oldest up. He would have been six, and he'd been asleep for a couple hours, and I woke him up and was like, buddy, come on, let's go look at the fireflies. So I got to take him out, and we spent a couple minutes of him being sleepy in the yard watching fireflies.
That's cool.
Yeah, I hope it's something that he, like, remembers when he grows up. I have a couple of those kind of memories from when I was a kid, like my dad waking me up to go see a Luna moth in the middle of the night. Like, I hope he remembers that. So I like fireflies. I think they're really cool and really special. And I got to remember to go out and look at them more often.
That's very true. I think that story that you just told is very, very classic of what I know people seem to associate with fireflies. It's this, like, memory thing from childhood. It's a core type of memory of seeing fields of fireflies, of having their parents interact with them in fireflies. It seems to evoke for a lot of people a simpler time, just their childhood in general. I know I've read through some other people's descriptions, and they talk about they make them think of the 4th of July, or they make them think of a transition period, like that move from spring to summer, that they're kind of the heralds of summer, that they're bringing all this light in, and it stays lighter later, and that the heat comes in, and it's like all this transitional period towards summer and freedom, and that there's a lot of nice memories and nice feelings associated with fireflies. And I think what Mike mentioned as well, this desire to keep them around, this desire to preserve them, it's almost tied into, like, keeping those memories. People want to hold on to memories, and they want to hold on to charismatic species like fireflies so we can keep making memories with them. And unfortunately, as was alluded to by Dr. Scavarla, it does seem like, anecdotally at least, there are fewer fireflies now than there were before. Jody, do you get a lot of calls and questions about this?
I don't, but I have a question for you, since you do research with grubs. Are the, like, I mean, everyone's obsessed with white grubs here and treating their turf. And if we know that lightning bugs spend most of their life in the soil, is this affecting their populations?
I would say probably not. The lawn chemistry is probably not as much, because that area where they're treating for the white grubs is probably not great firefly larva habitat anyway. Like you said, you find them under rocks and under logs and things. So where the white grubs are, that's not probably as appealing to them. But if they were going out onto the edges of their property and treating, or just in general, having that lawn rather than a more naturalized habitat, I would say is more impactful than any chemistries that we would put down. I've seen a lot of people that argue it's not the lawn treatments as much as it is the backyard mosquito applications. There's no hard data on that, of course, but it's this idea that you're going out and you're treating everything in the yard basically with usually a pretty broad spectrum product. And if there's an adult firefly that alights there, it's just as likely to pick up a toxic dose of pesticide, of insecticide, as a mosquito is. So I would think that would be a big problem if you had recently done that and the fireflies are about to come out. I know that people don't want to get bit by mosquitoes, but there are consequences to that kind of behavior. What do you think?
Well, those are the questions that I get mostly. Yeah. It's not necessarily, firefly, lightning bug related, but it's about broad spectrum insecticides and if we are doing this and it's harming right. them. I think sometimes people don't think about the consequences until they think about something they like mm-hmm. may be in danger.
I've always thought when we work together out there, I remember discussing often that people would come to us and be like, well, I don't see fireflies anymore. And where can I go to see them? And you and I were always like, well, I have them in my backyard. Like there was always this sort of like, maybe you're not looking hard enough. Like maybe you're not going to the right place.
Open your eyes, go outside.
I've also wondered when I was in Omaha, a lot of the people that live in Omaha now, they came from more rural communities and moved to Omaha into an urban or suburban environment. And there are going to be fewer fireflies there than what you were used to if you lived on the outskirts of a small city. There are differences there. But Mike, you kind of alluded to it earlier, this idea that there are fewer fireflies. I'm not saying that that's untrue. I'm saying that there are reasons why some people see fewer fireflies, perhaps. But do you know of any direct evidence that shows a decline, or is it just sort of packaged up in this whole bugs are dying kind of thing?
Oh, I wish I would have looked.
I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I don't know offhand of anybody that's looked like methodically at firefly decline, but like other insects, anecdotally, there are less. I think one of the big things that, like, pesticides are obviously a problem, but they're a problem for a lot of things. I think one of the big issues is light pollution too.
Yes, absolutely.
We took the night sky and the darkness that we used to have, and especially in suburban and urban areas, with lights on all night, we've kind of made this perpetual, like, crepuscular evening right. time. Like, it just never gets truly dark anymore in most places. And the problem with that for fireflies is, in addition to the species recognition based on the light pattern, they come out at different times. So, like, the Big Dipper fireflies, the ones that make that J pattern above your lawn, they're crepuscular. They come out right after the sun goes down, but before it's really, truly dark. But there's other fireflies that they don't come out until midnight when all the lights are gone. And it is as dark as it's going to get. And a big decline that we've seen in fireflies are these species that really come out later at night because it's just never dark enough for them. Yep. They perceive it as this constant crepuscular evening/morning time because we just leave the lights on. And I guess for me, that's one of the things that I try to take into account. We don't have like floodlights or mercury vapors are out or like security lights or anything. Like, we don't leave our porch lights on. Like, everything is off at night to keep our property as dark as possible because, I mean, it's only a little bit of land, but if I can make it good for the fireflies when it's kind of getting crappy everywhere else, then I'll do what I can. But and you know, you see this too across like more rural areas. There's more security lights. 40, 50 years ago that may not have had lights up in some of these farms or some of these areas. And so it could really get dark and you have these firefly displays over like a cornfield or a cut field or a hay field or whatever. But now there's more security lights. There's more just evening light. And so you don't see it anymore because we're screwing with the nighttime.
I actually, I'm really glad you said that because yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing. And it was something that I got to live through the other night. I've been shooting video footage with Jack, the guy I mentioned at the top of the show. And we've been trying to get all this firefly footage to make some firefly videos. We went to our horticulture research farm, which is right on the edge of Lexington proper. It's sort of an oasis of green in a very suburbanized area. Right across the street is a Lowe's and a Walmart. On the other side, there's a church. And then there's a little more ruralness, sort of catty corner to it where there's a state historic site. But driving there, you see nothing. Like there's no fireflies. It looks dead. I'm getting worried. We get on the farm proper and in all the corners and where there's trees and raspberries and apple orchard, all these things, it's just glowing. Like there's millions of them out there and it's dark. It's very dark in the center of the farm. So they can see each other. They're able to reproduce there. They're able to find one another. But once you start getting close to that Walmart, no offense to the Walmart or anything, but I mean, it's hazy and glowy and the lights are there. We just didn't see the bugs there. So we had to move to different parts of the farm. I also see it in my neighborhood. We have a park in my neighborhood, Veterans Park, that's really large. Mike, you went there when you visited and we saw the periodical cicadas. You'll remember there's a creek that runs through it. There's lots of like riparian sort of looking areas, I guess. And it seems like perfect firefly habitat, but there's no action there from what I've seen. And it's because there's four large baseball diamonds and they leave the lights on them all night in peak baseball season right now. So it's just washed out with these huge, huge lights at the tops of light poles. And I don't think they can see each other there. So I don't think they live in what really would be perfect habitat for both adults and immatures. It seems like a lot of people try to preserve those adult habitats, not thinking about the fact that the larvae need logs and litter and damp and moist and swampy type areas to try and survive. So it's a complicated subject is what we're trying to say. That's kind of where we come down on with lots of things here on Arthropod is there's no simple answer. You can do practices like Mike described. There are plants that you can plant that will help fireflies. We're going to put a list in the show notes from firefly.org that can help with that. And we hope that you get out and see the fireflies. I've been going out and enjoying them. My daughter and I have been catching them and having a good time. It sounds like things are starting to ramp up in Nebraska and Pennsylvania. So I guess we're just a few growing degree days ahead of you here in Kentucky.
What about habitat destruction?
I mean, do you want to stop urbanization, Jody? Is that the mission of our podcast?
No. But I see that. I mean, I don't know. You've been to Omaha. It just gets getting bigger and wider. It's going to be all the way to Lincoln, Nebraska soon.
It's like God spilled a city.
I mean, we've got urban turkeys. I just saw a dead deer a couple blocks away from the office.
Yep.
You know, like the wildlife has nowhere to go.
Yeah, they're trying to fit into what we leave behind. And so the more we do that, the less of these things you're going to see. If you do have these really nice core memories of fireflies, of that pageantry of nature, then think about the consequences of some of the choices we make and put pressure on people in your local communities to think about it. I think that fireflies are one of those species that it's like the monarchs. You can use them to get a hold of people's attention and say, hey, do you like these things? Well, if you build this new shopping mall right where you're planning to do it, there's probably going to be fewer of them. Do you want to contribute to the disappearance of them? We're getting political on Maine here at the end.
I mean, if we don't, like, who's going to, speak out for these things? Like, if scientists can't do it, if we can't say, look, these things are dying and these are the reasons why, like, is it political to point out, like, yes, urbanization and light pollution are killing these things that we like. Maybe we should do less of that to save them. Like, I don't
think so.
Those things have been politicized, but I don't think they're inherently political. But
They're just good things to think about.
I'll get off my soapbox.
No, I mean, we have a podcast. Have as many soapboxes as you want. We decided we were important enough to to clog the airwaves. So we get to tell people some of this stuff too, I think. Yeah, I think absolutely use fireflies as charismatic microfauna. Try and get people to change their minds about some things. Maybe there's something to it. I feel like it's worked with monarchs. So fireflies offer us another opportunity to do so.
Yeah, the Xerces Society has some good resources as well.
Let's plug all that into the show notes. Go out there and support these organizations. Give them some help when you can. And try and talk about bugs in your local community to get people to stop destroying their habitat and killing these wonderful sort of citizens of the night during the summer. With that, we are going to go ahead and close out the show here today. We appreciate you all listening. We hope that we brought forth some cool memories or touched on some cultural touchstones for you in terms of fireflies. We hope that you will find the show on the web. We are arthro-pod.blogspot.com. The show is also on Twitter, arthro_podshow. And you can find it on all of your favorite podcatcher apps. Probably the one that you're listening to it on right now would be your first choice. But if you ever wanted to try others, there's Stitcher, there's Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify, arthro-pod. You always have to include that dash or you won't find us. I was maybe a little too clever for myself back in the day when I named the show, but you can find us on all those different platforms. I'm also on Twitter. I'm at BugmanJohn.
I'm at JodyBugsMe, UNL.
And I'm still at MScavarla36.
And we hope that you will join us next time. Mike is cooking up something special for us. Mike, what are you going to be talking about?
I think I'm going to talk about carnivorous plants because I got some and I've been real hyped about them for the last while. Can't get it off my brain. So let's take what's in my brain and put it onto paper and talk about them.
Sounds like a plan. We hope that you'll all tune in for that. And we'll see you next time on Arthropod.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time. Same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.
I wish I had more time to just do nothing but watch fireflies.